Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Radio Show on KNSJ, 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice. Today, we'll be leading off our show with an interview with Curtis Morrison. He is an immigration attorney and a Democrat running in the 48th Congressional District against Congressman Daryl Issa, a Republican. Then, we'll have the early results in the Supervisorial District 1 race that will determine the balance of power on the Board of Supervisors. From California News Service, we'll have a troubling report about disaster resilience funds that have been halted by the Trump administration. We'll also have a report on student loan refunding. Just in time for spring break, we have a public service announcement from the County Animal Shelter looking for folks willing to adopt shelter pets. El Cajon Latinos held a press conference over that immigration raid at an El Cajon business. Then on Green Scene, hear why a judge has blocked the county transportation plan. And we'll also have a health alert today about local shellfish containing a deadly toxin. So stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters. Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Radio Show on KNSJ, 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice. Today, my very special guest is Curtis Morrison. He is an immigration attorney and a Democrat who is running against Congressman Daryl Issa, a Republican, in the 48th Congressional District. 2026 will be a pivotal election year, since Republicans hold a very slim majority in the House and the Senate right now. So if Democrats regain control of one or both houses, they will have the power to rein in many of the Trump administration's controversial actions. Curtis Morrison has started two law firms, and he's previously worked as a realtor and a substitute teacher, among other things. He has also filed as an intervener in a lawsuit that Daryl Issa brought against the state of California, seeking to prohibit California and other states from counting mail-in ballots received after Election Day. So we have a lot to talk about. Curtis, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I appreciate you having me. And I'm just so impressed with, wow, you've done your homework.
Well, you've got an interesting sight there. So why don't you start by telling me, what is it that prompted you to run for Congress?
Okay, so interesting story. I've not been happy having Daryl Issa as my congressional representative. I pay attention to what's going on with the federal government. I pay attention to what happens in Congress. It's very much impacts the work that I do as an immigration attorney. And I started to notice that Daryl Issa has become like the biggest cheerleader for Trump, you know, out there with the pom-poms for everything Trump does. And it's such a contrast to how he got elected and what he was doing for this district. He got elected saying originally, like, he went into Congress to be a watchdog.
Yeah.
I'm going to hold the executive accountable. It was the name of his book. And now he sponsored a bill to put Trump's picture on money.
Yeah, I mean, he also sponsored one to nominate Trump for the Nobel Peace Prize, among other things. You have said that he's become not a watchdog, but a lapdog under the Trump administration. I wonder if you can share a few of your specific concerns. We'll get to immigration in a minute, but first I wanted to ask you about the voting lawsuit that Issa has filed against California. Can you tell us a little bit about that suit and the status of it? I know you've got some other groups that have joined you on it. What do you want our listeners to know?
Right. So ISIS attorneys in that, they're NGO called Judicial Watch, who basically go across the country with this agenda of voter suppression, trying to limit the number of votes that are counted. Mm-hmm. And they've actually, with the lawsuit they're filing in California, they have had success in one state, in Mississippi, and the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals has upheld that success. So now in Mississippi, you mail your ballot a couple days before the election, but it arrives the day after election, it's not counted.
Very troubling, especially in a city like San Diego, a county like San Diego, where we get a lot of military ballots that are coming from overseas, as well as, the rest of us that mail the ballot in, and we're sort of at the whim of the post office as far as how long it takes to get there. So currently in California, you can count the ballots up to a week after the election. This would basically give no grace period. They would all have to be counted by election day at the same time they're trying to count everybody who actually showed up at the polls to vote. So quite troubling. So what are the grounds on which you're challenging this, and what groups have joined you as interveners?
So Darrell Issa is officially the plaintiff right now, and Shirley Weber, the California Secretary of State, is the first defendant. And so the California Department of Justice will put up a defense, and I believe a rigorous defense against this. However, I think that I could bring to this case, I have a particular standing and injury that the California Secretary of State might not be able to put forth an address. So that's why I'm intervening as a party, not only as a voter, but also as a candidate. I
So you're
believe
concerned that
that
your own votes, not just presidential votes, but that your own votes might not get counted if they come in late.
correct. And also, if you read the complaint, Darrell Issa is alleging that this is going to cause him injury if these votes are counted. I mean, and he cites other elections where Republicans have lost because votes were counted. And I want to be able to go into the tribunal, go and tell the judge, listen, I have an alternative theory on his injury here. Maybe people are not voting for him, and that's causing his injury, and that's a self-inflicted wound.
Yeah, and I'm sure there are probably other places where a Democrat lost in the late counting, so it just seems really bizarre that you would want to have all the votes counted. But anyway, I know you've got a veterans group that's joined you and a seniors group that I saw on your site. So it looks like you're not certainly not the only one concerned about this very important voting rights issue. Moving on, I'm wondering how concerned you are about threats to our democracy that so many Americans have been speaking out about right now, with a president who's basically been defying courts and doing a lot of things that courts have already found to be illegal. What might you do if you were in Congress, especially if there were a Democratic majority, that's different than how ISA has handled this situation and the Republican majority back there?
Great. So the first thing I need to address here is the affirmative actions that ISA is taking to give Trump cover for, eroding these rights. ISA has sponsored a bill before Congress. I think they're due to vote on it in the House today, called the No Rogue Rulings Act. And he characterizes it as, we're stopping judges from giving relief to people that are not before them. Okay. And it's interesting because I have a unique perspective on this, because I've won injunctive relief against the Trump administration before. I've won injunctive relief against the Biden administration too. And
Very
in
interesting.
both in the immigration context and in both situations, we were on the right side of the issue. Okay. And the idea that a federal judge shouldn't be allowed to right the wrongs that the government does just because the plaintiffs couldn't afford to go to court or couldn't
Yeah, so
show up in that venue.
what does the ISA bill do exactly? I know that it's basically going after judges who've made rulings that Trump doesn't like, but specifically, what would it do if it passed?
Well, right now, federal judges do have great power. If they see something that's unlawful or unconstitutional, they can do something called a nationwide injunction.
So this
And
would stop nationwide injunctions. They could only stop it in their own specific district.
I'm glad you asked this, because it gets to like the problem with his reasoning. He doesn't think district court judges should really have that power. He thinks it should be in the hands of higher courts. I think he's probably okay with the circuit courts or the Supreme Court. But the thing is, those courts do not have capacity for the amount of
And it takes years.
controversies.
If years. So if you're talking about, say, oh, illegally deporting immigrants without due process, if he had his way, this would go on for years before there
It
could
would
be
go on
any
for years, and there would be
redress.
no redress at all.
Or
We're already
anything
seeing
else
there's
that
no
is.
redress.
Yeah, and not just immigrant issues, obviously, it's anything. Let's talk about immigration specifically. This administration has been pushing mass deportation of immigrants. They're talking about taking away rights of even certain green card holders and others. We've seen, as we alluded to, even the deportation of people to an infamous prison in El Salvador with all kinds of human rights violations. So let's talk about immigration and due process. Tell me about what your biggest concerns are here and anything you've learned from your own practice, maybe the people that you're representing right now, and how your views on this differ from your opponents.
When I was younger, when I was in college, I studied the Holocaust, and I read Primal Levi and Hannah Arendt, and I know that like totalitarianism and authoritarianism does not happen on a Tuesday. The way it happens is a gradual process where they take away one right a day, and they get away with that one, they take the next one away. And so I do see serious threats to the democracy right now. And the due process thing is overwhelming for me. The idea that the president even asserted the right to like disappear people without due process.
Yeah, it's basically kidnapping. If they're not allowed their due process, I think the term deportation is a bit misleading there in some of these cases. In the cases where there hasn't been any court finding that someone's eligible for deportation, you just say, oh,
right.
You have a tattoo. We think you must be a gang member, and therefore we're going to send you off to a prison that you can never get out of in another country. And now they're saying even if they make a mistake, they can't get them back.
Right. And you're exactly right about the term, too. Deportation is sort of like the common street term for what in law we call removal.
Mm-hmm.
And these terms mean going through a process. And there's no process with what's happening. So it is totally disappearing. But the Supreme Court case that was decided yesterday, it's a little confusing if someone's in an echo chamber because the Democrats say they won, Republicans say they won, and really it was a win for both, I guess.
For those that may not be familiar with this, can you fill us in on what the Supreme Court just did? I should state we're doing this interview on April 8th, so when we say yesterday, this was an April 7th Supreme Court decision.
Right. So the Supreme Court says that Trump can continue using the 1798 law.
Yeah, the Alien Whatever It Was Act.
Alien Whatever Act, yeah. Mm-hmm. He can continue using that to remove people. However, he has to give them due process now. So that basically is going to stop in the tracks what he's doing, because many, if not the majority of the people that he already disappeared, would not have survived. That would not have happened.
So it may stop it going forward if he obeys the Supreme Court. A whole different issue if he doesn't, then we have a real constitutional crisis. What about the people who've already been sent to that prison? Did the Supreme Court decision address those folks at all? Or does he have to bring them back?
The Supreme Court did not address those folks. And there seems to be a lot of people just like saying, oh, well, what are we going to do? And the way I look at it, when Democrats get back control, we really have to right these wrongs, mm-hmm. and we can do it. We're the country that put man on the moon. We can accomplish great things.
Yeah.
And we cannot be bullied by this little country that we're paying with them telling us, oh, you can't have somebody back. That's not going to happen.
So you would think all you have to do is withhold a payment. If we can get terrorists, if we can get people back from Hamas, we should be able to get people back from a prison in El Salvador. What are your concerns, by the way, regarding the Department of Government Efficiency, or DOGE, led by Elon Musk, that has been doing these just mass firings and even completely eliminating, the Department of USAID? They're trying to eliminate the Department of Education, agencies that were approved by Congress. So it's supposed to take congressional approval to get rid of these. And also just the mass firings and mass deleting of information off of all kinds of different government websites, from healthcare to history to you name it, to DEI things. Can you speak to the whole DOGE issue and what you're most concerned about there?
Right. So first, the whole thing is unlawful. I mean, Congress didn't set it up. You can't just set up an agency. The executive doesn't have that power. But even if the executive did have that power, I have a serious issue with it, because there's already accountability structures in law. There's Office of Inspector Generals. Every big government agency has an Office of Inspector General, although now I think some of them are probably being closed. And I'm one of these nerds that on a Saturday night, I actually would go to the State Department's website and read their audits of embassies and different departments to find out, what are they doing right? What are they doing wrong? And sometimes it's funny. Sometimes it's interesting. You know, there's like in the old days, they said, oh, they were spending $100 on a hammer or something. You know, I remember last year finding that there was this one embassy where all the consular officers kept wrecking cars. And I thought that, well, that's interesting, you know. And so they were trying to figure out like how they could stop this huge expense from this embassy, from like all the foreign service officers having car crashes. So it can be entertaining. But anyway, there are auditors and they're trained auditors, and many of them are attorneys, and this is their job. They're not a bunch of teenagers in a van that just show up with Red Bull.
Yeah, these kids that he has doing this, I call them kids, young men in their 20s, you know, 20s or 30s, who have absolutely no background in the agency, don't even know probably what a lot of these things are, that they're just red penciling and deleting. You know, you would think that if you're going to look for waste, fraud, and abuse, you should do a more calculated analysis to actually find it and not just cut everything, you know, getting rid of the good and the bad. Let's talk about some of the social issues, healthcare. Women's health in particular. I know you've said that protecting health care and women's health is important to you. Can you speak to that briefly?
Gosh, I long for the days when in the progressive circles, the narrative and the conversation we were having is like, the Affordable Care Act, it's great. Should we take it further? You know, should we do single payer Medicare for all? Mm-hmm. And now the conversation is more like, how do we keep Medicare for people that are dying? How do we stop them from cutting off Medicaid and Social Security?
That's a big concern. Yeah. And they're talking about making it harder. They want to make it so that if you're applying for the first time, you have to go into a Social Security office. You can't just do this by phone anymore.
Yeah. Right. And I have some experience with this situation. The Trump administration did this with a division of the State Department called the Kentucky Consular Center, mm-hmm. where they decided to not answer the phone anymore. It was like, it was, and I did a Freedom of Information Act request about that and got all the back memos back and forth. We're like, and basically they're like, we'll blame it on COVID and then let's just see how long we can do it. And that's still in effect today. 5 years later, the very integral part of immigration process for many people, they do, if they call the phone number is not answered. Okay. That's just the way they do it. And then if you send an email, they did a cable that said, let auto reply do the work. And so basically people get templates, and I see
it's
this,
insane.
This is going to, what's going to happen with Social Security. You're not going to be able to talk to a human because there will not be a human there.
Yeah. It's frightening, especially when you consider how many seniors might be vision challenged or hearing challenged, where they really need that, you know, that one-on-one
Agreed.
Touch. Let's move on and talk about the economy. Donald Trump ran on a policy of, hey, you know, we're going to get rid of inflation, right? And instead, he's imposed all these tariffs around the world that are fueling inflation, actually raising the prices of all sorts of things, with the idea, of course, in all fairness, of trying to bring back jobs. I wondered what your thoughts are on tariffs and the economy and inflation. And do you know where Darrell Issa stands on any of those things?
Great questions. Okay. So I got two things I want to talk about on economy. First, tariffs. And also, I want to go back into immigration for a second.
Okay.
But with respect to tariffs, Darrell Issa, that's the one place where he's not been a cheerleader, but he's not standing up to Trump and saying that they're wrong. And I have a theory on that. There's a billionaire class. He's not a billionaire, but he's close, I guess.
For many years, he was called the richest man in Congress, may still be.
I don't think he is anymore, and I think it bothers him. But anyway, there's this circle of people that get a heads up on what's going to happen with the government, mm-hmm. and they make their moves in the market before you can make your personal moves and your 401k or your pension fund can make their moves.
Right.
And so this tariff thing is fluctuating the market up and down, up and down. And every time it does it, you've got people in that class, like Darrell Issa, getting a heads up. And what they're doing is they're buying low and they're selling high over and over. And this wealth, where it's being transferred from, is our pension funds and our 401ks, you know? And so I don't even think, maybe I'm wrong, I don't even think Trump believes in this tariff thing. I think the whole thing is just grift. It's a scam to transfer wealth from everyday people to billionaires. But I definitely think that tariffs are bad for the economy. It's just a ridiculous idea. I'm actually in Mexico visiting family and speaking at a conference this week, and eggs, 18 eggs, $3. So it tells you a little bit about how the world is.
They
right
don't
now.
Have to be, you know, this high. And some of it was bird flu and some unrelated, you know,
yeah,
not related to tariffs. But the tariffs are, you know, we've had the Chamber of Commerce speak out the day before he imposed the tariffs, and the building industry head. And they were both saying this was going to be very bad for the San Diego economy, raising the price substantially for home prices, for car prices, and a lot of other things. And then the tariffs that got rolled out were actually even higher and on more countries than they knew about
right.
that conference.
Right.
So,
I mean, the opposite of globalism is what North Korea is experimenting with. And everybody knows that doesn't work.
Yeah.
You know?
But Russia was exempted from the tariffs for unknown reasons. We can
right. Unknown reasons. So the one other thing I want to touch on about the economy is his mass deportation agenda and his war on immigrants. Like right now, they've decided that they're going to, the IRS is going to share information with ICE, which is going to give ICE a new tool to round up people, round up taxpayers.
Yeah.
it makes me angry.
Yeah, they're buying stuff from a lot of these stores and locally, the sales tax.
They're going to undermine our economy. Yeah. Carried out mass deportation puts the United States in a very vulnerable place where we do not have food to eat.
Or people to pick it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Who's going to grow the food? And you never hear Trump talk about that. You never hear Daryl Issa talk about who's going to grow the food.
San Diego County has more family farms of 10 acres or less than any other county in America. And nearly all of those are in his district. So you would think he would be more concerned about the impact this is having on farms and farmers. They've also eliminated the program that allowed schools to buy food directly from farms, which has also hurt
Wow.
local farmers.
I had no idea.
Yeah, that just happened. Yeah, and food banks. So
that's awful.
This president has pulled the U.S. out of the Paris Climate Accord and has eliminated all sorts of green energy programs that the Biden administration had put in to address climate change. I believe Daryl Issa is on board with that. Can you talk a little bit about the differences between you and your opponent on climate change and sustainability?
Yes, I would be happy to talk about that. Climate change is an issue that is very important to me. I believe that future generations have a right to a stable climate, and that we have a duty and an obligation living in this time not to undermine their rights by filling the atmosphere with carbon. I work for a nonprofit right out of law school in Oregon, focused on representing youth plaintiffs against the U.S. government for what the U.S. government has done to actually cause climate change. People actually talk, they say, we need climate action now. And I'm like, you know, the funny thing is, there is a lot of climate action by the government. The government's actually like permitting fossil fuel extraction and licensing it.
Which Trump wants to ramp up, including going back to offshore drilling off of California, even places like Santa Barbara that had one of the worst oil spills ever.
Right. Drill, baby, drill. Yeah. Funny you mentioned the offshore drilling, because I wrote a law review article about 10 years ago about how Congress needs to establish a fracking waste regulatory commission, because right now when they drill, they use fracking, and basically what comes back up is poison. And on the ground, on the mainland, they move it around in trucks from one place to the other and hope it evaporates and have all these little tricky things to pretend like it goes away. In the ocean, if you see an oil derrick from like a beach and it's out there, when that comes up, they just pump it in the ocean in the same beach water that you're swimming in.
Oh my gosh.
And they're carcinogens. So, and basically no progress has been made. These big oil companies are allowed to self-police themselves, and it's not working. And history will say, oh my gosh.
And at the same time, he's taken away all of the incentives for things like investment in solar, in wind energy, in geothermal, in anything else that would be more sustainable. The Trump administration has also taken aim at diversity, equity, and inclusion, or DEI, including recognition and protections for women, minorities, and the LGBTQ community. Can you comment on that, please? And again, how you might differ on these issues from Daryl Issa?
Oh, where to start? Okay. So the whole thing about DEI is as I understand it, is white men have had this privilege and they have got used to it. And now all of a sudden people are calling that privilege into question. And so it seems like a desperate, like, last attempt to hang on to that privilege, to say, oh yeah, you want to take away my privilege? Watch this. I'm going to, like, take away all your tools to do that. To me, it's just sad. I was raised by a single mom and she experienced workplace discrimination. I'm gay, so of course I've seen discrimination in my life as well. I've been around people. When I was in real estate, I saw people discriminating against people because of their race, against one of my realtors one time because of their race. And immigration, and see it all the time too. So, I am very cognizant and aware that we are in a world where we have work to do if we want to eradicate racism and classism and sexism. And pretending like it doesn't exist is it's not viable.
Let's move on and talk about foreign policy for a bit. We've covered, I think, most of the major domestic issues right now. What would your priorities be for foreign policy, including in hotspots such as Gaza and Ukraine?
Big question here. Okay, so the first thing I would say is restoring this thing called diplomacy. Mm-hmm. It was sort of abandoned during the first Trump administration. And for all his strengths and weaknesses, I would say that Secretary Blinken did not do a good job restoring what was taken away there. And we are no longer an actor on the international stage that uses diplomacy to solve problems. We've gone back to just, you know, brute force, or just say, it's ours, we do what we want, you know? And
so you mean taking over Greenland and Panama?
Like, I want it. That song where she's like, I want it. I got it. It's mine. It feels like that. And I think that fuels resentment abroad. It makes enemies. Mm-hmm. Like, there's a little kid right now, 2-year-old, who's surviving in Gaza, and his whole family's probably not surviving. That kid is not going to grow up to think that the U.S. is great when he knows that the U.S. helped finance the destruction of his community, his country, and his family. And so I think that we have external consequences to our foreign policy, and they're not being taken into account.
Yeah. Can you comment specifically on the Gaza-Israel situation, which is such a divisive war? But do you have thoughts on that? Is there a resolution? What, if anything, would you do differently than what President Biden or President Trump has attempted to do thus far on that?
Right. So I realize this puts me left of the current elected party, but I think that Biden could have held Netanyahu and Israel to higher standards mm-hmm. in the implementation of dealing with Hamas. I don't think it was necessary for them to level Gaza. And I do believe it was a genocide.
What would you say to those who are also concerned about the families, the 1,300 people that died in Israel from the Hamas attack? I mean, how do you stop that? Should the Palestinian people be calling for new leadership as well? Certainly a lot of people have called for, you know, a change in Israeli leadership. But what about Hamas? I mean, as long as Hamas is still there, can't this happen again?
It was a horrible tragedy. As I understand what's happening in Gaza right now, I wouldn't even call Hamas leadership. Mm-hmm. I mean, they've taken away the infrastructure of what a community is. If there's no schools or hospitals, there's no town halls, there's no elections. I would say the response to what happened, it was so disproportional that it's going to do Israel more harm in the long run. Not only with how people feel about Israel, but all those kids, man, they're going to grow up and they're going to want revenge. And it's not, it's natural.
It's fueling more terrorism in the end. As far as Ukraine, the free world has largely stood with Ukraine against the unprovoked invasion by Russia. And yet, President Trump has over and over sided with President Putin and Russia. Where do you stand on that?
Yeah, I believe Putin and Russia are the aggressor. And if you let him have Ukraine, he's not going to stop there. He wants to put the old USSR back together. And as long as he's going to use his last breath to do it. And we should not give an inch. We
should. But you would stand with the U.S. rejoining NATO, for example. Not that the decision is up to you, but you know,
correct.
Congress, I suppose, could take some actions on some of these things in theory.
Right. And what's interesting is Darrell Issa used to care a lot about foreign policy and peace in the Middle East. I did a little bit of research before I joined the race, and I was like, wow, he used to like want to solve the Middle East peace, you know? But as you see Trump completely making a mess of it, he's silent.
Yeah, it seems like they're all afraid to speak out against Trump for some reason. San Diego is a huge military town with a lot of active duty military personnel and their families here, as well as a lot of veterans. And yet ISA has been oddly silent, as far as I know, about the deep cuts that Trump and DOGE are making to things like veterans affairs. Can you address that, please?
Yeah, it's a huge issue in this district. At the empty seat town hall that was held in Escondido, it ended up taking, I thought, a surprising amount of the agenda was spent on that, because that's what the people in the room, they were questions about. And there's a lot of people in our district that served abroad and have PTSD and stuff, and they need services. And the idea that those services are being torn away. I mean, I was not a veteran. Gay, they wouldn't let me serve. But my grandfathers were, and both of them died in VA hospitals. And I spent a lot of time in VA hospitals growing up. And I've always thought that that was kind of like a really noble, great thing about our country, that we take care of veterans for the long haul.
Yes, we should.
And that idea that that we would back off from that. It's like one of the things we do right. We shouldn't give in on it.
Yeah. Listeners, if you've just tuned in, we've been speaking with Curtis Morrison, who is a Democratic candidate running in the 48th Congressional District against Republican incumbent Congressman Darrell Issa. Curtis, I just want to ask you the open-ended question of what else would you like our audience to know that I may not have specifically asked you about today?
Well, I would say like my experience as an immigration attorney has been really eye-opening, because I know why people want to come to this country. I understand what they think the American dream is. And I'm sometimes put in the awkward position of explaining to them, people abroad who see us as the shining city, that we're not quite there yet. And that we have a lot of work to do, not only for immigrant families, but for like families that have been here for a long time. They're not seeing the American dream either. And I think that my big message is we have a lot of work to do in Washington to make this the kind of country that we need to be. And it's not make America great again. It's like, let's just keep on the path of getting to the greatness, not going back to something that wasn't necessarily great.
Yeah, helping the middle class and those who are not the billionaires or the oligarchs.
Right. And I would go one step forward and actually, you know, go back to RFK and acknowledge the fact that we have to take care of the poor. I mean, we have a lot of homeless in San Diego County, and we need solutions for that, too.
Curtis, where can people go if they want to get more information about your candidacy or get involved in your campaign?
Thank you. I've set up a website, curtisforcongress.com. It is fully functioning now with Act Blue, so we can accept contributions. And although we would never be able to out-fundraise Darrell Issa, especially now he's got this liaison with Elon Musk.
Is Elon Musk directly supporting Darrell Issa right now?
Darrell Issa is saying nice things about him in tweets. And so Elon Musk is coming underneath him with the little American flag. And so, I don't know, they're flirting on Twitter about that. So I'm sure money will pour in if Darrell Issa needs it, right?
Okay,
so what I'm saying is we do need to raise money. And I will be on the phone raising money, both from inside the district and outside the district, because we need to get the message out. I don't need to raise $400 million or anything, which who knows, he might end up doing that and spending it. But we need to raise enough money to where people understand there is an option to this Darrell Issa thing.
There you go. Well, we are out of time, but I want to thank you very much for taking the time to join us today. Curtis Morrison, candidate for Congress, on the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ, the network for social justice.
You're listening to the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news for San Diego's inland region. Now, stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine radio show.
This is Miriam Raftery with an update on the race to fill the vacancy on the County Board of Supervisors. The balance of power on the Supervisors Board remains in limbo as the special election to fill the District 1 vacancy left by Nora Vargas' resignation now appears headed for a runoff. No candidate has received 50% or more needed to decide the race outright. As of our show taping deadline on Friday afternoon, Chula Vista Mayor John McCann, a Republican, has around 43%, and Imperial Beach Mayor Paloma Aguirre, a Democrat, has 32%. Mail-in ballots will continue to be counted until 1 week after Election Day. San Diego City Councilmember Vivian Morena is in third place with 13%. The other four candidates received single digits. Aguirre says the stakes couldn't be higher. This runoff is a clear choice between Democratic values that put working people first and a Trump-Republican agenda that would be a complete disaster for all of San Diego County, she says, Times of San Diego reports. Aguirre wants to prioritize infrastructure funding and ramping up efforts to secure funds to address the U.S.-Mexico border sewage pollution crisis that has closed beaches in the South Bay for over a year. McCann, a Navy veteran, has a platform to increase funding for law enforcement, cut government waste, oppose unnecessary tax hikes, and block the mileage tax, according to his website. The seat became vacant in December when Vargas unexpectedly announced after winning that she would step down due to personal safety concerns. Her resignation has left the partisan split on the County Board of Supervisors with two Republicans and two Democrats. If the vote count holds and no candidate receives more than 50% of votes, a special election will take place in July between the two top vote-getters.
A free press is the foundation of our democracy. KNSJ Radio is dedicated to providing nonprofit news in the public interest, not special interests. We rely on your support to continue bringing you important stories from San Diego and East County that you won't hear anywhere else. Please make a generous donation at knsj.org to sustain KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
The Building Resilient Infrastructure and Communities, or BRIC program, was created during the first Trump administration. It has distributed $5 billion to local governments and tribal nations for projects to help recover from natural disasters. But now, a statement from FEMA calls the BRIC program wasteful, ineffective, and more concerned with climate change than disaster response. M. Donahoe with the National Wildlife Federation says funding disaster response should be a nonpartisan issue.
Every dollar invested in natural disaster resilience and preparedness saves approximately $13 in long-term economic savings and damages and costs avoided post-disaster. So it's really just a bad investment decision.
In the meantime, Sonoma County, for example, is partway through a $48 million wildfire resilience program to harden structures, cut back dry vegetation, and create defensible space. I'm Suzanne Potter.
Some student loan borrowers are seeing their payment plans suspended and their payments rising due to changes implemented by President Donald Trump's administration. Around 43 million Americans have some kind of student loan debt, according to Newsweek. The Education Department reports that Americans collectively have $1.5 trillion in student debt nationwide. Trump has begun the process of dismantling the Education Department. Nearly half of all Education Department workers are being laid off as the agency undergoes major restructuring. The Trump administration also got rid of online and paper applications for income-driven repayment plans from the federal aid website, Newsweek reports. This change occurred as the Eighth Circuit Court of Appeals blocked the income-driven repayment plans in February. This means that former President Joe Biden's Saving on a Valuable Education, SAVE, SAVE plan, and the public service loan forgiveness options are no longer available. Now that these income-driven repayment plans are being suspended, borrowers can't qualify for potential forgiveness or lower monthly payments based on their income or family size. Many borrowers will also see monthly payments increase because of these changes. SAVE allowed 8 million borrowers to work towards student loan forgiveness and to be able to ignore their student loans for months. However, forbearance is scheduled to end this year, with the first payments due in December. The Public Service Loan Forgiveness Program, PSLF, allowed public service employees to have their student loan balances cleared after 10 years of minimum payments. Also, any payments that borrowers make no longer count towards the 120 qualifying payments they need to get to student loan forgiveness under the PSLF. PSLF allowed public service employees to have their student loan balances cleared after 10 years of minimum payments. Trump's executive order claims the Public Service Loan Forgiveness Program misdirected tax dollars into activist programs, sometimes through criminal means. But the program provided loan forgiveness to help incentivize people to take jobs that might otherwise be hard to fill, such as public health jobs on Native American reservations and public defender attorneys who could earn far more in private practice. An hours-long outage on Wednesday, March 12th, affected the federal website for student loans and financial aid. The National Association of Student Financial Aid Administrators received reports of users experiencing technical issues and having trouble completing the application for federal student aid. The Education Department has reduced its staff to about 2,000 since Trump took office, including over 300 people cut from the federal student aid program. Elisa Canchola-Banez, policy director at the Student Borrower Protection Center, says that borrowers should download their payment history from the federal student aid portal, screenshot tracking information if they're on a plan that allows for forgiveness, and reach out to Congress members to help with their case. Kevin Thompson, a finance expert and CEO of the 9i Capital Group, told Newsweek, borrowers should expect higher payments moving forward, which could lead to a surge in defaults and credit score hits. If the Trump administration takes a harder stance on student loan relief, things may become even more challenging for those struggling to repay. Michael Ryan, a finance expert and the founder of MichaelRyanMoney.com, says that many payments now don't even cover accruing interest, creating negative amortization, where loan balances grow despite regular payments. So high-balance borrowers with moderate incomes could end up in perpetual debt if forgiveness timelines are eliminated, as proposed, he warns. Ryan expects a spike in default increases in May as millions of borrowers see payments going up by an average of $200 a month. Trump has signed an executive order to move student loans to the Small Business Administration on the same day that agency announced it was cutting 40% of its workforce, according to The Hill. Moving student loans to the SBA, which has no background or familiarity with the student loan program, will only make things worse for borrowers, Banez predicts. Some experts are advising borrowers to reach out to their loan officers and carefully document their repayment efforts, according to The Hill. Borrowers are in a precarious situation, with millions caught in limbo as the Trump administration seeks to take away student loan forgiveness programs that were established and expanded by former President Biden. Currently, The Hill reports, advocates say they have little hope to offer the 45 million individuals with federal student loans impacted by Trump's drastic changes. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is John Tidwell.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news from San Diego's East County.
This is Miriam Raftery with a public service announcement from San Diego County's Animal Services. It's spring break time and shelter pets are ready to trade kennel life for beach vibes. You can help make their spring breakout dreams come true and give a shelter pet a forever home. If you come adopt your new best friend and join in the fun by dressing in your favorite beach attire, think Hawaiian shirts, board shorts, or a sunny straw hat, you'll receive a free beach party kit to get the celebration started. All month long, you can name your own price when adopting adult dogs and cats. Plus, the county is offering 25% off all adoption fees for puppies and kittens. Adoption fees are also waived for pets who've been in the shelter for 30 days or more, senior pets 8 years or more, seniors who are adopting pets age 60 and up, and every adoption includes spaying or neutering, a microchip, vaccinations, and for dogs, a 1-year license. You can visit animals at either shelter location in Bonita or Carlsbad between 10 a.m. and 4 p.m. Tuesday through Sunday. Just bring a valid photo ID. You can view pets available for adoption at sddac.com. Again, that's sddac.com. All pet adoptions are on a first-come, first-served basis. If you're not ready to adopt yet, you can become a foster pet parent, giving a shelter pet a temporary break and helping them adjust to home life. County Animal Services will even provide all the supplies you need as a foster parent, such as food, bedding, and a leash.
A coalition of advocacy groups and El Cajon residents held a press conference and protest on Wednesday, April 2nd, outside of El Cajon City Hall, to denounce the March 27th immigration raid on a painting company in the unincorporated part of El Cajon. The protest was organized by Latinos en Acción in response to the city's recent immigration standpoints and the raid. According to the U.S. Attorney's Office, several workers were arrested and charged with false documentation to work in the U.S., but no serious crimes beyond that were listed. The owner of this raided business is being charged with conspiracy to hire undocumented immigrants. Multimedia outlets have confirmed that dozens of other workers were detained temporarily outside the business until their citizenship was verified. Speakers at the conference called for accountability from the mayor and 3 council members who all recently voted on a resolution to allow the city's police to cooperate with federal immigration officials regarding undocumented immigrants accused or convicted of crimes. City officials confirmed that in a recent council meeting, the mayor and others met with Homan to discuss increasing cooperation with federal immigration authorities. The city's resolution calls for cooperation with ICE over undocumented immigrants who are convicted or merely accused of a crime. The Trump administration has indicated it considers anyone who crossed the border without documentation to be a criminal who can be deported. State law limits cooperation by cities to only immigrants convicted of specified serious crimes, and the U.S. Justice Department has confirmed in a letter to the city that it will not indemnify El Cajon or its police officers against any lawsuit the state might file if the city cooperates beyond what the state allows. The comments given to East County Magazine from these city officials all seem to be at odds with each other. Mayor Wells' comment on the matter, sent via email, stated that nobody knows why the business was raided. I personally doubt that it was solely to arrest people whose primary crime was to have crossed border illegally, but I have no confirmation of that. I only know what I was told by people high up in the Trump administration that the focus would be on gang members, traffickers, and people who have committed horrible crimes, and that it would take quite a while to extend to the group mentioned. I understand the fear that people have, but I suspect that it was the activists stoking it for their own purposes. Let's see what the facts bear out. El Cajon's city manager sent a comment via email as well, claiming that El Cajon's staff, police, management, elected officials, etc., had no involvement in the federal law enforcement action that took place outside the city limits last week. I learned about the event when I saw a media alert. Further, the city's involvement would have been a violation of Prop 47, and we are committed to abiding the law. Lastly, Councilman Steve Gobble responded by saying that a resolution of the City Council of El Cajon, declaring the city's commitment to ensure the public safety of all residents and asserting the city's intent to comply with federal immigration law to the legal extent permissible for the sole purpose of removing violent criminals from our community. President of Latinos en Acción, Marianne Brenham, was present and spoke at the protest, saying, El Cajon's officials are using their seats to push pro-Trump resolutions that have no legal weight but do cause plenty of harm. They sow division and unfairly target their own hardworking neighbors. They endorse these mass deportation politics, and now we are seeing the results. Along with Brenham, Pedro Rios, a member of the American Friends Service Committee, spoke on Tuesday as well, stating, make no mistake, these types of actions terrorize working families and cause tremendous trauma to members of our communities. These are constituents of the elected officials that hold office in the building behind us. He added that the city officials are supposed to be held accountable for their actions. Instead, they are having secret meetings with our current administration that are seeking to deport hardworking community members. The press conference and protest ended with a coalition of 30 residents, advocates, and community attorneys hand-delivering a public records request to the city clerk. The request asked for paperwork regarding all communication of city elected officials and employees with U.S. Customs and Immigration, ICE, the Department of Homeland Security, Trump's border czar, Tom Homan, the San Diego County Sheriff, State Senator Brian Jones, and the anti-immigration group America's First Legal. The request is looking for all communications between these groups regarding enforcement of immigration law, the immigration enforcement resolution, and the immigration raid, specifically between November of 2024 to present. Along with the request for communication records, some at the protests also held signs calling for the recall of El Cajon City Councilman Phil Ortiz, whose district has a majority of Latino voters. Sergio Conte, an organizer in the recall effort, told East County Magazine that the group has gathered 76 of the required 90 signatures to put a recall election on the ballot and hopes to fulfill the signature needs in the near future. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Juliet Sanders.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news from San Diego's East County.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Miriam Raftery with a Green Scene Report. San Diego Superior Court Judge Joel Wolfi has struck down San Diego County's Transportation Study Guide. The decision, in a lawsuit filed by Cleveland National Forest Foundation and the Coastal Environmental Rights Foundation, is a win for environmentalists seeking to reduce emissions from vehicles to reduce impacts on climate change. But it's a setback for opponents of a controversial vehicle miles traveled or VMT proposal that the county previously scrapped after objections from the building industry and an East County supervisor. Duncan McVetridge, a Descanso resident and director of Cleveland National Forest, calls the ruling a major victory. He adds, it's time for the county to stop taking shortcuts and instead implement its low VMT climate policy. We're running out of precious time to start solving our transportation housing problems in San Diego. The county's continued delays hurt San Diegans and the environment, McVetridge concludes. Sarah Ochoa, the program director at Coastal Environmental Rights Foundation, says in a press release, we know we can't meet our climate goals without significant reductions in automobile travel, adding, we should build housing and transit where it makes sense, instead of dooming future generations to wildfire risks and soul-crushing commutes. Senate Bill 743, a state law passed in 2022, requires local agencies to assure that development projects are designed to minimize environmental harm and reduce vehicle miles traveled by limiting sprawl development in rural areas, thereby reducing greenhouse gas emissions from vehicles. The county has said that VMT mandates could cost home builders $60,000 to $200,000 per unit. The county's transportation plan sought to provide exemptions to SB 743's VMT requirements for infill and village areas, where transit exists or is expected to be added soon. It also sought to exempt small projects that the county contended would have minimal environmental impacts. But Judge Wolfi wrote, none of the evidence relied on by the county to support its assumptions concerning its infill threshold comes from independent outside sources or reflects anything other than unsubstantiated opinions. Similarly, regarding small projects, the judge concluded, there was no effort by the county to develop any evidence that small projects generating 110 or fewer trips are likely to cause a less than significant transportation effort in San Diego County. Now, back in 2011, the county adopted a general plan that encouraged growth in village cores in places like Lakeside, Spring Valley, and Ramona, areas with village centers, services, jobs, and a need for housing. A Voice of San Diego article in 2024 noted that by encouraging small lot development, the general plan helped make homes more affordable in places like East County, which are typically easier for first-time homeowners to enter the market in. But after SB 743, the county shelved its general plan and implemented strict VMT guidelines, so strict that the Building Industry Association declared the county dead to us as some home builders pulled out of the area, according to Lori Holt-Feiler, CEO of the Building Industry Association. In an editorial published in Voice of San Diego, she wrote that strict VMTs backfired, leading some home buyers to purchase homes in Temecula and commute to jobs in San Diego, actually causing more vehicle emissions. Supervisor Joel Anderson pushed County Council to review case law, leading the county to reverse course and create a transportation plan that allowed projects to be built if they are consistent with the general plan, exempting them from requirements to mitigate for vehicle miles traveled. The lawsuit filed by the environmental groups successfully argued that the county's transportation plan violated requirements of the California Environmental Quality Act, or CEQA, as well as SB 743. Now, the county may opt to revise its transportation guidelines to comply with the court ruling or file an appeal.
A free press is the foundation of our democracy. KNSJ Radio is dedicated to providing nonprofit news in the public interest, not special interests. We rely on your support to continue bringing you important stories from San Diego and East County that you won't hear anywhere else. Please make a generous donation at knsj.org to sustain KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
This is Miriam Raftery with a health alert from the County of San Diego. The county is advising people not to eat locally harvested mussels, clams, scallops, or oysters unless they were purchased from a state-certified commercial shellfish harvester or dealer. Shellfish safety notifications also have been issued in Los Angeles and Santa Barbara counties. In each county, dangerous levels of domoic acid, which can cause amnesic shellfish poisoning, have been detected in locally harvested mussels. The naturally occurring domoic acid toxin can cause illness or death in humans. Cooking does not destroy this toxin. The warnings do not apply to shellfish sold at stores from approved sources, such as those sold at local markets or restaurants, because state law allows only state-certified commercial shellfish harvesters or dealers to sell to restaurants and markets. Shellfish sold by certified harvesters and dealers are subject to frequent mandatory state testing to monitor for toxins. The symptoms of amnesic shellfish poisoning can happen from 30 minutes to 24 hours after eating toxic seafood. In mild cases, symptoms may include vomiting, diarrhea, abdominal cramps, headache, and dizziness, with symptoms resolving in a few days. But in severe cases, a person may experience trouble breathing, confusion, disorientation, cardiovascular instability, seizures, permanent loss of short-term memory, coma, or death. The California Department of Public Health will continue local sampling to determine when sport-harvested shellfish is safe to eat again. The California Department of Public Health has a toll-free shellfish information line that you can call at 800-553-4133. Marine mammals are also susceptible to domoic acid. Sea lions poisoned by this acid have attacked humans recently off California's coastline. The public is reminded to maintain a safe distance of at least 50 yards from any injured or deceased marine mammal. Although you cannot get domoic acid from the sea lions directly, these are large animals and protected species that need to be given space for their safety and the public's. Sick marine animals can be reported to SeaWorld Rescue by calling 800-541-7325, and dead marine mammals and sea turtles can be reported by calling the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration at 858-546-7162.
Our East County Magazine radio show needs volunteers, and so does our award-winning news website at eastcountymagazine.org. If you would like to help write scripts, learn reporting skills, research topics for our news team, or have an on-air voice to be the media, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617.
This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine radio show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jewel, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, Blues 3 Music, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine radio show or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine radio show.